Helps and also the state administration so we can limit our spending in state government. I have followed the guidelines in working with the court system's budgets. There are no new positions authorized by the subcommittee. This can be justified and by instructions to Mr. Rick Berry, who will be here for the court system. And we've also recommended that the court system budget be reduced by the guideline recommendation of 5%. And hopefully this 5% reduction can be at the administration's priority, which they can take the 5% reduction wherever necessary. At this time, I would like to ask Mr. Rick Berry to please come up, and also Bob Schroeder with the our finance division, who has done an excellent job with the subcommittee in the early morning session. If you gentlemen please come up.
Check out. If you'd rather have Mr. Schroeder over next to you, that'd be it. That's whatever fine. Your pleasure is there, because Carney's not coming back. However you want to work it.
Yeah,
Representative Rogers.
Yeah, just a comment in response to Representative Adams' idea of holding the budget down. The biggest area of budget growth is in formula programs, such as aid to the local school district. That's the biggest component of budget growth. And the no-no employees, first those programs that don't have formulas and those are supposed to do, and I suggest that the budget can be held with the formula first. Thank you.
Mr. Barrier, do you have a prepared remarks?
Just a few remarks, that's it. I won't take much of your time. But I just want to fill you in on roughly what is happening with the court system and the press here. And then, first, I'd just like to make a correction in the letter that you have before you that I've written to Representative Adams. I prepared this before I saw the actual guidelines in effect, and it underestimated the reduction by about 511,000. I took 5% of the total, but it's just to be all new positions out first, and then 5% so adds up to more money, particularly with an error here. I just wanted to clarify that. Does everyone have the feed book for adjusted spending?
Yes.
If you could look at page 150, it makes it very simple for me to present briefly what I want to say. This lays out in a simple format what our budget is doing this year. The court system budget is reflecting a tremendous increase from the current year budget to next year's continuation level. I want to explain briefly why it's such a large increase. If you look there, the current year authorization is $23,500,000 roughly. And the adjustments to that are salary increases and judicial retirement. The actuarial retirement program was put in last year by the legislature and funded this year, something which is trying to make up for 20 years of not funding the judicial retirement program. So it's going to be very expensive for several years. But this is something that the court really has no control over.
What, real quick, you say for 20 years of not funding the judicial retirement system?
Right. It's been, the bill was established world from 67, 68, actually, whenever that was, so that the liability goes back to 1960. It was established to pay for judicial retirement on an as-go basis each year, appropriation in the court system budget for the currently retired judges. So there was no retirement fund like you have a public employee's retirement fund or teacher's retirement fund, which meant if the state were to, for example, go broke, there'd be no fund to pay judges' retirement, whereas there would be, in theory, a fund to pay employees' retirement.
How does that differ from TRS and PERS funds?
Well, there is an actual fund which is derived from contribution of state funds from the general fund of about 12% per employee, plus 4.5% contribution from each employee out of his paycheck goes into the employment retirement fund of the state. From the fund, then the proceeds of the fund, the revenues, whatever, from that fund, then pay the actual retirement to the retirees. And it's actuarially computed so that at any one point in time, there's been enough money put in to cover all the potential liability that's been accrued to that point. So if the state sees business, the state would be able to meet its liability in retirement.
That's, you suggest that's the case on the PRS and PERS?
That's the theory.
That's the theory, but it's not the case either anymore.
I'm not sure how the actuarially sound the PRS and PRS are. I can't speak to that. The judicial retirement is not an actuary at all. It's simply been the court system's budgeted each year for the estimated number of judges that be retired. It's in the general fund appropriation. So last year,
are the judges, the judge employees making contributions now?
Judges and employees are contributing 7%.
What about the all judges making that contribution?
The judges that were appointed after the effective date of that bill of, you know, the last retirement bill, which I believe is 1978. So judges appointed prior to that in the previous retirement system do not pay the 7%.
Judges had to pay, but apparently the interpretation of the court is that the judges that were grandfathered in, even though the law can change, they continue to not have to pay, and the state continues to make their payment for them in the form of these actuarial judicial retirement supplemental appropriations.
Right? Right. I believe that was specifically in the legislation. It was not a judicial determination, a legislation.
Oh, so you mean we could change by law and they can pay now?
I would imagine.
Yeah, we could, only to the extent that we raise their salaries from today. Otherwise, it could be, and probably would be, pursued by the court as a reduction in court salaries, which they would find unconstitutional. So, but with the next pay raise, if any,
we can't even lower their pay.
No.
You can lower their retirement. You can't lower their retirement. But
if there's a general salary decrease applying to all state employees, you can lower.
But in all probability, we have to wait until the next raise to institute 7% and take that out of the raise.
We reduce everybody's salary for one day and then they get that back up and set the court system the next day.
Maybe I should continue here then before we get our judges. That is something that, in a budgetary sense, we have no control over, and it's being taken out on a monthly basis out of the state. Just like the 12-13% retain on the public employees, the same as it goes into the fund. We have a reduction of one-time items, which are studies that we funded last year and other equipment items and things that we only did once, and we don't have to have those funds this year. We pulled them back out. And then we put in inflation at $485,000, which is based on the guidelines distributed by budget management. Only exception being we put in 15% for library books, because that's basically costing more than the 8% that is stated in the guidelines.
The 8% the guidelines had suggested for inflation.
Right, for inflation.
Where are you supposed to get that number?
I don't know. That's what we were informed by budget management. We found that that's, for at least half the items, it's not sufficient to place the fact that a lot of these travel particularly. Well, travel they've allowed a 12%, but that's not really enough to recommend that. Anyway, the continuation budget of $30,257,000 is not, it's a lot of money, but it's not any additional resources. It's exactly the same resources we have today, the same people, the same amount of supplies, the same everything. And there's not a lot in there. It's not like the old maintenance level used to be, where you've got some additional supplies for more cases or additional people here or there for additional work, anything like that. It's just the cost of what you have today carried forward at next year's price. What the subcommittee recommendation for the budget is $29,881,200, which is $376,200 below the continuation level. I've talked to the subcommittee about it, and I always have to be careful what I say to Representative Freeman, because he remembers everything I say. I've told him that if that is in fact our budget, that the court can, I can't stand here and tell the committee that the court would fold up and not be able to function with that type of stuff. The court could function. He'll bring that back to me in 2 weeks and tell me we don't need it all night. But it would affect operations. We would have to do something. I mean, everything we have is basically committed, and 90% of it is very much fixed costs for rent, for salaries, for those types of things that we can't really incrementally just reduce down an arbitrary amount.
Okay, Roger.
Yeah, sir. You show under the continuation level of salary increase adjustment of $3,865,000. Last year, your salary personal services were $13,978. That says that your salary increase adjustment is a 27.6% increase. How does salaries increase 27% from 1 year to the next?
Well, it's actually, it reflects a 2 year increase in the budget. It's, we actually received an appropriation in the current year of, I believe it's we received an appropriation in the current year of $3,258,000 to cover the current year pay rate.
So that $3,258,000 should be added into the $13,900.
Right, exactly. Right, for the current year. There's only $607,000 more for next year for that pay rate. So basically, that's what the committee has recommended. What I wrote then to the committee after the first committee hearing, this is after the second committee hearing that we have firmed up, was basically a brief summary of what was in our budget and why generally we felt that, that some of these items at least should be considered. But of the items, and this is, I think, you have a copy of that letter, a number of these items we feel are, I mean, I'd like to just point out to the committee, are necessary if the court is to maintain a comparable level of service next year to what it has this year. That's a legislative decision if it wants more or less of these services, but it should be aware of what reductions would do or what additional items would do. We've asked for a total of, an additional level, we've asked for $1,700,000. It sounds like a lot of money, but the court is not a small business. This is one budget for the entire court system. All the Supreme Court, trial court, administration, the whole branch of government. It's approximately 500 employees, and it's all consolidated into one item right here. And therefore, percentage-wise, we're looking at perhaps 5%, 6% increase that we've asked for. Included in that were 22 positions, which again is about 4.5% increase in positions. Did not come in with what we thought was an inflationary expansionary budget, the one that offered a certain amount of items, which I'll go over, to maintain our level of service, and then some discretionary items that the legislature could choose from to improve things for us and public, whatever, if they so choose. I mean, that's what the legislature decides it wants to make in these types of improvements. So in breaking this out, what I've done on the positions, identified approximately 14 positions that, in my review, I feel are required to keep what we have as far as maintaining present levels of service, additional 8 positions that generally would be used for improving service to the public or making us more efficient, that type of thing.
Yeah, when you talk about service to the public, how do you determine a level of service in the court? You probably should not cover convictions or anything. What measure do you use?
Rogers, I suppose the major is one of the on-site observation and evaluation of each request that comes in as to why there's a need and what is going on with that particular section in that particular court. For example, in Anchorage, they requested, I believe, 3 traffic curbs. We put 1 in the budget. You can go to the traffic section of Anchorage and see that there's public lined up in the hall waiting to pay their traffic tickets, and we're not processing fast enough to try to keep up with them. So you say there's something wrong here that needs to be more help so we can process these people. I should point out, we did have approximately 60 positions requested by the courts around the state, and we have, you know, taken, I think, a fairly hard look and cut them down to 22 to start with. Not that all 60 were required, but all of them were good positions, none of them were that fluffy. At this point, I think the list we have is a fairly solid list, and the 14 I pointed out are ones that in some cases, we've filled the need in the past year or two, with CETA employees, and 4 of them are that way. Several, just as I said, like in traffic, the public isn't being served. Fairbanks, a small claims position where they just aren't getting adequate treatment for the public that comes up to be served in small claims. That's one difficult part about court budgets. It's hard to pinpoint when you need another position. We try to evaluate courts one to the other and see that they have comparable positions and comparable workloads, which is why the last 2 or 3 years we've had positions in for Kenai and Kodiak particularly. But they've grown much faster in the last 5 years than most other courts, and the positions have not grown. We have added positions in Kenai and Kodiak, and we're still attempting to bring them up to what we feel is a standard that is proper. And I suppose you hear about it from the judges, from the clerks, whatever. You get calls about problems they have, about the inability to do certain things, about mistakes that happen. You get an increase in numbers of false arrests and things like that. You think that you need to be more careful and have more people to process the work. All the positions we're talking about in this budget are not. They're all working level positions. The clerks, accountants. That type of positions that are simply there to make the system function and not to have mistakes and errors and all that. So they're not really glamorous positions, but they're positions that, like I said, the court has approximately 40 judges and roughly an additional 450 employees, or 400 other magistrates. So there's a lot of people there besides the judges to process these cases. And what we've asked for here is the areas where the need, greatest need is there.
Is there a pretty direct relationship between our increases in the police budget and the need to increase their budget?
Rough and broad, that varies in different areas. For example, small claims would not be related to police or library work or something like that. Traffic, definitely. I think it's a tremendous increase in traffic. Palm other things like state troopers and city police. So as they picked up more people on traffic tickets, we've had to add staff to keep up with. In criminal areas in general, Superior Court level, the criminal workload is relatively small compared to the civil case load. We have maybe 500 felonies a year in Anchorage compared to several thousand civil cases. Whereas in district court, it's really quite the reverse. I don't have the figures planned, but thousands of misdemeanors handled by the district court judges. So the district court is particularly impacted by more arrests and more prosecutions, particularly not directly impacted by police activity, more the district attorney or city attorney filings in the court. But there is generally a flow through of that type of impact. Briefly, in addition to the positions that we've asked for, I wanted to point out, still back at the continuation level, we will be absorbing, I would estimate, 100,000 or more of increase next year in inflation that's not in the budget. So at least, definitely, 35,000 to 45,000 postal rates, which went up 20%, which costs us, we have a massive postage budget, mailing out juror questionnaires and those type of things, And when you work it through, it's going to cost us that much more than we have in the budget to support. And we've seen travel has been going up faster than our budget to keep up. Commodities are costing more than inflation factor. So, I mean, I think in continuation, already we're going to have to look for ways to save money and keep it tight to break even at the continuation level. Then, if we want to do anything else, as far as any improvements, any changes in the system, you get into this remaining roughly $1 million of items that got left starting on page three. Some of these are, we feel, really essential if the court continues to progress. The first one, facilities improvements, is an area that we've been working on, I think, very satisfactorily the last 5 years. We've been able to get, I think a month ago, we finally got the last magistrate out of his house, working out of his house. Now, every magistrate has an office somewhere. And that's been quite an improvement. 10 years ago, or 5 years ago, we had probably 10 or 12 magistrates still working out of the house. We've been able to lease a number of facilities around as they become available, if people have been willing to build them for us. And the only way we've been able to do that is that most years, the legislature has appropriated us roughly $50,000 to $60,000 of unidentified rent funds that we use to rent facilities that come available. The biggest problem in a lot of these, particularly bush areas, is there's nowhere to rent. And so when, particularly recently, if a Native corporation or a village council or someone builds a building, if we have the rent funds, we can get into it and get the commitment for the space. So without that, it's really hard to come in and get these spaces. So the $50,000 is something that we find has been very helpful to us, and we certainly urge the committee to consider giving us that for the next year, because it gives us something to work with in the rent area. The rest of the rent is all covered. We also asked for $93,000 for remodeling buildings around the state. These are minor facility projects, but they make a difference in the use of the space. I think we've got projects in 8 to 10 short locations that just ranging from moving a counter here or there, or making improvement in the courtroom, just to make the facilities more usable. Nothing major, but it's important if you want to get the youth out of the facilities and pay them. We've asked for $53,000 for judicial travel, just to improve the service around the state. It costs us more and more to get out. And we're trying to travel more. We've implemented a program in Bethel with the acting district court judge to travel that area and service that area. That takes money to travel on. So that's for, well, I'm asked just about every day by attorneys and sometimes by the doctors to increase their fees. We've been paying them $40 an hour for, I guess, 4 years. Put in our fee schedule about two years ago, after the supplemental we had that 1 year, court-appointed attorney fees. And they screamed at that, but we have kept our attorney costs down to the appropriation level. Anticipate continuing to do that. But they have some rights to complain that they aren't getting any more money. To raise them 10%, cost us $138,000. It's a big budget item.
Karen, did I understand you say you had an acting district court judge in Bethel?
Right. It's just a temporary experiment to see how it works.
You don't have a district court judge at all?
No. A very good judge.
What happens when you've got one of your regular district court judges out and you have an acting person in there? Is this reflected in this budget?
No, sir. That's a temporary program that the Supreme Court established recently just to try it out and just to see how it works. And my assumption is, and I've got to check with the Supreme Court and see what the plans are. If it looks like it's going to be working, I would imagine it would be asking the legislature to fund that as a permanent basis. Otherwise, it would be
soon. Chairman, where'd you get the money to do this?
Funding for
temporary judge office.
This year, for selling Mr. Schroeder, we had some additional funds from other judicial appointments that were not filled because of the recruitment time for the position. So the Supreme Court recognized we had the funds to try this, so that they wanted to try it out and see if it worked.
Mr. Chairman, don't we add up a line item these funds that go into these positions?
In personnel, yes. In order to identify as personnel funds and for specific positions. the, within that line item, if there are unextended funds, that still can be spent for that same line item.
In Bethel?
It wasn't line item
in Bethel, how can we spend it in Bethel? I'm just trying to get straight, Mr. Chairman, here, where we're getting this money from.
Okay, it'd be from the total appropriation for personnel, for the top four. But the most likely, it's probably the funding from, the Judge Sanders position, you know, that was raised for 5 months, whatever, or something like that. And that's one area that you have open.
They're trying to figure out where they got the authorization to transfer the funds?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I see some ghosts filling up in the judiciary now.
Well, it was in the mouth, I don't think you'll find very, very many ghosts, but, we do try to undertake some new programs to see what will work out. And, it's something spring program set up, and they asked me if we could afford it, so yes, we have the money, personnel to do it. But they don't try it. See if we have any luck, and if we have luck, it seems to be successful, we'll ask legislature to establish it as a fund program. And they wanted to try it out, so they're trying it. I mean, the court system has a policy ever since 1973 not to create new permanent positions or long-lasting positions without approval of legislature. And we've stuck by that ever since that time. You know, not finding positions in the budget that are not authorized. We also not find continuing positions in the court that are not reflected in the budget. But you will find occasionally this type of program that we try to see how it works. And, I won't say we never create temporary positions because we do. But they're not, they don't, you know, attempt to fill long-term needs with positions other than the ones that are approved by the legislature. So, I'm glad to discuss it with further about how that works. I'm not trying to hide anything. Governor, I had authority to create new positions entirely, quite honestly. Yeah. And he does. Right. Yeah. The two branches do, but the judicial branch is never here.
Yeah, that was on the
By the way, at this point, do district court judges still have to be, acting district court judges, do they have to be lawyers?
That's a good question. I don't know.
It used to be they didn't, but I remember there was a proposal to change it. I can't remember.
Of course, now we've increased, we've allowed the district court judge to be a non-lawyer if he's experienced in that thing. So, I don't know how that applies to people. I don't think so. I think acting district court judge would still be a non-attorney. I'm not sure.
Yeah, could you give us an update, Rick, of the Court of Appeals? Looks like you're asking for close to $700,000 increase from your FY81 budget. Could you tell us how many cases have been reviewed by the court and could you run down with this consider? Court of Appeals.
Right, you mean the appellate court?
The appellate court.
That includes the appeals court and the Supreme Court, right?
Right, that is both.
Oh, that's both.
Right, and I believe the increase that's in the buffers is only, other than the items I just discussed, an accumulation level, there's a total of only $67,300 of other items, one of which is a court rules attorney, which would be a person to advise the court rules, basically. Something like you have in the legislature, to keep track of the statutes. Our rules are getting large enough that we need someone to maintain the rules, basically. But that's the only increase. But the rest of that is the salary increases and the retirement
items. No, how many does it?
No specific person. It's usually stuck on our staff attorney, Grant Callow, does a lot of it for the Supreme Court. And it's just not satisfactory because he ends up spending a good deal of time doing those sort of things. He doesn't have time to prepare work for our office or reviewing legislation or whatever to help us out. So the Supreme Court would like to see that type of thing created so that's what he can do. When we have legislative changes, we can update the rules, that type of thing, and stay on top of it. But presently, no, there's no decision for us.
Can you answer my question? I'd like to know how many cases
are
being
reviewed. Okay, I'm sorry. The Court of Appeals, I believe, officially began operation in October of this year. At the time that they began operation, I think the majority of the criminal cases presently pending before the Supreme Court, which we're talking about 250, I believe, maybe 200, 250, something like that, were transferred to the appellate court. So they picked up an increased caseload. They have processed it. I don't have an exact figure. Quite a few cases already. It takes some time for them to work through their system at the new court to have the hearing and to write the opinion. So they've issued a number of opinions and are doing more cases that they're issuing short opinions and just basically getting the cases out. It looks like they're very productive and catching up on the backlog of the cases. But I don't have the exact figure. I'll get those for you tomorrow, what they've done to date. But the work to date is a bit deceiving because it takes, you know, under the rules, it takes 3 or 4 months to even get to the stage that you're invited to. Mm-hmm. So I think probably in 6 months you'll see a more of a steady state of cases, the monthly average of what's going out. Maybe we'll know how productive they are. In all appearances, they're going to be quite productive. The thing they're working on is doing cases.
In the retirement system, does it cover all of the 400 people, or who's covered in the justice retirement system? In this budget,
that specific line item for the increase for judicial retirement are the Supreme Court judges, appellate court judges, trial court, Superior Court judges, district court judges, and the administrative judges.
And that's what, 50 people roughly?
Right.
And are they required by law to participate in the retirement system?
It's a, yes.
They're required by law to have to participate?
Well, the statute says there is established a judicial retirement program and it covers the following people. Just as I'm required to participate in CRS, I'll take the option.
But of the 15,000 state employees, plus all the teachers in the state, every one of them participate and pay 7 or 8% of their wages every year, but these 40 or 50 judges do not. Is that correct?
Well,
except these few new ones.
Well, the teachers, I believe, pay 7%.
Or 8.
And the current employees pay 4.5, which is different, slightly different retirement program. Mm-hmm. So we're paying 4.5. The appellate court judges, all those that came on, are paying 7%. We have 4 new Superior Court judges who are paying 7%. And I believe 2 new district court judges are paying 7%.
Again, that's only the people that have been employed in the last 2 years.
Right, roughly 10 out of 50, I would say.
Of all this large number of people, those would be the only one. There's still judges that are making $70,000 and are not paying one nickel into the retirement system. That's 2.5 times better than any retirement system in the state.
Yes, sir.
I find that hard to live with.
Well, me too. I don't know what to do about it.
Thank you.
Sure, the only way that you could do it would be through the Constitutional Amendment. Do you agree that logistically the only deal would be for the
time? Frankly, it's something I haven't studied to pick it up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I still find it grossly unfair if a new teacher is hired, they are required by law to participate, but they immediately either have to pay 7% or if they choose the survivor's benefit, they pay 8%. Anyone else that works has to pay them. And I have lots of the judges were friends of mine. They may not be after today, but I find this highly unfair. I think it's the most unfair thing to treat in a small group of employees in this manner. And then there's a tremendous unfunded deficit in this, many millions of dollars.
That's what we're attempting to get to.
And I think it's somebody's responsibility to try to correct it. I don't know how, but I think it's been corrected.
Mr. Chairman, let's respond briefly. I don't want to belabor this retirement system. Not a good topic to belabor sometimes, but it's a different retirement program entirely from the employee retirement, and for a number of reasons, one of which is that the intent of this retirement and in practice how judges are appointed is it's an effort to recruit attorneys who are hopefully at the well into a career who are out working who have learned something about the law, to encourage them to stop their practice, stop investing and making money. They're generally starting to make all their money at that point, and get them into a state job that they'll be working in for 15 to 20 years. And they're not in the system for perhaps 30 years or something. The teacher might be, who starts out when they're 21 or 23 or whatever out of school, and it works for them. They're only in the system, perhaps generates from age 40 to 60 or whatever. And retirement was set up in such a way as to pick up for what would, in most cases, be a lost chance for them to make the largest amount of money they'd be making in their older years as they developed a very mature practice. And in fact, we found there's quite a correlation between years of practice and earning faster returning. So they're basically giving up the years when they'd make the most money, save up for the retirement, and develop an equity or assets to live on in their old age. And we've asked them to give that up. That's the logic behind a retirement program, which is substantially different and improved over a general employee retirement program. The legislature obviously felt that as of last year or 2 years ago that they still should contribute something. If there's an appearance sake and nothing else, they shouldn't get it free, and that law was changed. But so whether it's applied back to the previous judges, I really don't know how that works. But anyway, that was the logic, and it's generally true, I think you'll find around the country, that most of these retirement programs are, or many of them are, quite different and improved over state retirement programs.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be highly surprised if there's one in the nation that equals the one we have in the state of Alaska, whereby you can get 5% of your top 3 years in 15 years, which means after 15 years of service, you can draw 75% of the average of the high three, and that you can do that without any participation. And I would challenge anyone to produce the rest practices of any state that would equal that in the nation.
I feel a little strong now.
Rick, how long has the retirement system been in effect?
I believe since 67 or sometime like that. It was 1960 or sometime in the late 60s, I believe. I have to look at 66, 67, 68, I believe.
Did you have something to remark?
No, Mr. Chairman. I decided to say no.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's made a little difficult to shift gears back into budgets, but I'll try to run through this quickly. Other items that we find are particularly necessary for the court to make improvements in some rather vital areas. Electronic recording is one of the most important areas in the court. We have one of the few states that has electronic recording as the official court record, and legislative budget and audit did do a study last year, an audit of our system, and came up with the conclusion that our report was accurate, that our system is considerably cheaper than alternatives in other states, that the quality is at least equal and generally superior to other systems, and that we have basically a good system going.
What's it? You're talking about using tape recording instead of having that little guy out in front.
Right. That guy's very expensive. Plus, that's all you can do. We have one clerk who runs the machine, keeps log notes, and also serves the court clerk. That's where the savings comes to. And the court incentivized to have additional bailiff and court clerk coming in the court to square and witness to do all the things. So that system is considerably cheaper. Electronics are always a changing area. The present equipment we're using, which I think the legislature has a number of the size that actually modified for you to run slower like ours do so you can get more on the tape. They are no longer being produced. The four-track system is no longer popular. So we're basically trying to plan for the future of where we go from here. And that takes money for research. We ask for a position to pick up some of that work as well as equipment. Data processing, everybody's getting more and more into data processing. I look around and I begin to think we're more modest than I thought, and the things we're doing in data processing, we're gradually expanding some of our programs on the state computer. Nothing earth-shaking, but what we're doing has been very useful for the court management. Additional funding for that. I think everybody's getting computers.
There was commenting earlier about the cost of stamps going up and went up last Sunday. Are you using your computer system sending out your mail, the electronic mailing system?
We use it for some messages between courts, particularly library requests, that type of thing, and sending back and forth. But the bulk of our cost is in mail to the public, primarily to the jury system. Many times the jury will be called from the medical hospital throughout the mail. Also, we have a number of your regular letters and correspondence that you have to get through mail that aren't just messages that are more detailed mail. But the bulk of our mail is that plus shipping supplies is a heavy expense. A large number of supplies through our central office in Anchorage, forward and out to the various ports. We found it cheaper to do that. But that incurs a good deal of postage from the transport. And the library is, it's not already, I would mention, it's always been a problem. The court has the only state, only library in the state, only law library, which is the only, probably the only state in the union where there's no law school, there's no law library, there's no any other resource, so we're it. Anchorage is the only major reference library, and the other locations, the only library that supports. And I'm told by the attorneys and the librarians that we've got a long way to go before we get the criteria of the law school, library, whatever.
You know the new library that Anchorage is putting in, the one of the 33 acres? Is there any discussion about including a law library section in there or not?
Not to my knowledge.
Wouldn't be a consideration.
And it's
the law library that is currently operated by the court system is the one on the first floor there. That's it. It's not a very good law library.
See, one reason our library cost is so high that we are supporting, fairly major libraries in all the major cities. We know Fairbanks, United States, Kansas City, all these places have Superior Court libraries, and they're very expensive to put in. And then all the magistrate posts have statutes, rules, reporters, a minimal library, but it's very expensive. So a budget gets diffused all around the state.
Have you thought of computerizing that information and then just giving people terminals so they could put it in? I know there'd be a lot of programming, but once you got it accomplished, it would really be efficient
updates. I would say in a not too distant future, that would definitely be a...
Isn't that the kind of thing that really would be appropriate for Alaska? And when you get a situation like a small state with Oregon or Washington, I mean, they got a lot of law schools peppered around the state, so just about anybody can drive to one if they really want to do some research or whatever. But it seems to me that in Alaska, you're going to have Nome and Cottonview and Barrow and Bethel and all these different places. You'd have one really good library in Anchorage, and if you would just over the as an ongoing project, just input all that into the computer. It seems to me then all they need is a terminal, they can just pull it up and be very efficient.
I believe the construction conditions that we undertook that ourselves as a project, it probably runs a lot of copyright doing that. You have to pay the publishers. Because we looked at actually microfilming a large part of the thing has microfilm collections, and the courts are not building. Like in Costco, we're going to have to add to get another 1,000 to build it and put the library in some of our agencies. Because of it didn't take up so much space. We looked at lots of the microfilm and stuff in the house, but we run into copyright laws. And by the microfilm, it's generally more expensive sure, but there is more of that coming on. We're experimenting with some of that now, so I think that we're going to see a lot more of it.
Yeah. But not readily.
But not right the way not the last. Basically, that's generally what I wanted to highlight in the budget. The pitch I'd want to make is I don't think we're asking for the world here. We're not asking for a gigantic increase in the budget over what is what I feel like is a fairly tight continuation level. I guess I've never expected legislatures from past experience that they're not likely to fully fund everything they ask for. There's probably some cuts. We only put in items that. Governor, each year treats our capital budget slightly differently. This year, we committed to him. He included a capital budget as a courtesy item in the budget workbook. If you look in the blue book or whatever, you'll see it. I'll probably see it. They're typed in, not part of the computer numbers. So when he prints out the bill, they're not in. So
the governor asked the legislature for no capital budget for the court system.
He's not endorsing the budget.
Sounds like the subcommittee has more work to do on the district information committee. You might highlight what your capital request is going to be without going into too much detail unless you get a question on it. Generally, like, what is the total number of dollars you want for the capital budget and what are the major items that are included? Could you do it that way?
We have our capital budget consists of two projects for next year. I'll discuss the smaller one briefly, the Kodiak project, $238,000, to basically renovate, I believe it'll be both floors there. We picked up an additional 900 square feet of space from the Department of Labor on the first floor, and we've been able to shift around some space on the second floor. We need to put in another hearing room there because we've got not much more activity that the magistrate is being for as well as the Superior Court judge and trying that type of thing. So, and just the other remodeling in the building to make it a functional court to last for at least some time anyway. That we think is a very important project we'd like to see that one. That particular project gets overshadowed by our request for a new Anchorage Court building, total price tag of $42 million. This building would be a third building in the court complex there, built on the parking lot beside of the court. $43 million would buy you, buy the property across the street in front of the parking garage, presently owned by a partnership, about $2.5 million, which would give us another half of a block of state land to use for future growth of the parking at the present time. It would buy you the entire cost of the building, including the detailed plan, construction, administration, equipment, $1.5 million of equipment. So it's a total cost figure. It's approximately 200,000 square foot building, which we estimate would last, of course, for the year 2010.
Can I just cover the question? Was this requested last year by the court system?
Yes, it was.
Did the legislature include any capital money in the court system last year?
Yes, they included approximately $1.8 million, I believe, for remodeling funds and presence for Anchorage Court.
That's the expanded capital budget of the court system last year. Are there dollars on the books, if you will, that have been appropriated to either cash or bonds that haven't been spent?
I'm sorry, I want to check my part. There was an appropriation for the $100,000 planning study in Fairbanks. Was that last year that was appropriated?
Is there money that has been appropriated or approved in the bond issue that the court system hasn't spent yet?
There was a bond issue.
I don't know.
We've gotten one general fund appropriation for a few dozen barrels, so we'll be
legislature fund the big courthouse maintenance?
That was in 1971. It was a part of a large ASA project that covered the new facilities statewide.
Also, that was never approved by the voters in the bond issue. It wasn't approved by the legislature either. It was an ASA project, and the state's now hitting this thing on that.
Right. That's the state of nearly all of our major projects.
That's all there.
Yeah. I think we had about 7 million.
We can't do that.
Unfortunately, no.
I don't think it's not the case that it wasn't approved by the legislature.
Well, the resolution of the legislature authorized the construction.
Right, it went through the system and was authorized, as this court building was.
Right.
But ASA did the financing.
Right, it's a concurrent resolution. As a matter of fact, some people say the legislature built this building over here because of the, think about health insurance or the center finance. Health insurance, because of the overrun cost to find, had to redesign the building. It was going to be a building covering the whole area of course before the building. The legislature said, for that much money, you've got to put more square feet up and move some of the high rise. So the legislature was involved certainly.
And also involved in setting off the figure finance top, say, which is part of the growth, right?
I think so.
Third and fourth, and then the 15th, I'm right.
Right, I do want to point out on this capital budget for this year, the 43 million includes what we think are accurate figures, reasonable figures for like about 2 years in place before we actually did the thing. Actually, construction costs now would be 22 million, which is like 29 million by the time it goes to bid. We think that the figures are reasonable, so that if it's appropriated, we might have to ask for another 10 or 20 million dollars. In preparing the capital budget, we did put out the project into what amounts to two phases, which the legislature wanted to review it that way. Could. One is slightly less than 10 million, which is 9,900,000, which we would certainly need this year, which would allow us to buy the land across the street to do the detailed planning and do some additional remodeling in our present building to prepare that for the changeover into the new building.
Is the new courthouse going to have in courtrooms there?
Yes, it will. Our plan would be to move a good deal of, not all of, but a good deal of the district court over into that space.
Is there any new theory on design on courtrooms? I always feel so damn intimidated when I go into a courtroom because the ceiling's about 40 feet high and the benches are so majestic that I've always just wondered what the philosophy behind that sort of construction was. I suppose like you walk into somebody's office and they've got a giant desk and you have to sit in a little chair and look up at the guy. You sort of know your place, I guess. I've always been curious about that.
The part of that is the nature of the process. If you have a court clerk and you have a witness and you have a judge and then you have jurors, there needs to be a certain relationship and height between them. So the jurors need to be here, let's say, and the witness up a little bit so that you can see them. But then you generally want to judge is deciding to be a little bit above that, logic. So by the time you do that, you're up about 3 steps, which puts you up maybe 7.5 feet up in the air. Therefore, at least in the judges or the arena where the attorneys and judges sit, you need at least a 10-foot ceiling or something, or else the judge is sitting ahead and talking about
the ceiling. How high is the ceiling that the court room is?
Those are, I would guess, 12 feet. 14 feet.
I'm aware of being that really once or twice.
I think the specific answer to your question is that that specific design has not changed since it was implemented in England hundreds of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
It's been exactly the same for I don't know how many hundreds of years. It's the same English.
And it kind of goes with the whole legal process. And the legal process has been the same for 1,000 years. So it's still been the same.
The
retirement system
built the same way. The jump is a little bit higher than the jury, right?
We'll
get
one there.
Well, that was good.
The court in the We keep the administration separate from the judicial
system. Well, not exactly. You do have the administrator who has an office the same size as the Supreme Court judge, and he's also in the retirement system. Completely.
But anyway, so the...
Representative Haugen's got a question. Those 874 funds, what do you think? Right, because they're talking about acquiring property that's now paying taxes. The state takes it over, that reduces the tax base.
This could be better.
I think we're having a little too much fun in there.
I know.
Yeah, we must be getting ready to adjourn.
Representative Adams, do you feel that we've covered the highlights that you thought the committee should be made aware of? Are there other areas that...
No, that we've covered mostly everything. One of the things as chairmen of subcommittees that we each usually have a special interest or a pet peeve that we take care of. And one of the parts that I think has increased in the budget that I take in justice would be in two things would be perhaps in the Sitka court, we made some Sitka area, we made some increases down in Southeastern, and the other portion of the budget we've made is in narcotics, and we've increased that quite a bit. And I know there's some differences of opinion when I brought it to you, Mr. Chairman, in the morning. And I do also share Mr. Representative Montgomery's concern on the retirement fees. And what I want to say is I still believe that in all 10 subcommittees, there's some slush funds that we should hold on to costs and the state employees. And I'm still going to say that for this whole session on that. And I do believe we should monitor that.
I appreciate the conscientious approach and statement to it, too.
Yeah, I think one thing we do need to look at is the level of increase over last year. Obviously, if the governor allows 100% increase and we cut it by 5%, it's quite different than if the governor allows a 5% increase and we cut it by 5%. And I think that in applying that formula, we should be aware of what kind of increase the governor has given, perhaps even more so than the actual percentage decrease from the governor. We ought to be looking at where we come from last year's budget. Secondly, if I disagree with the automatic assumption of owner's position, in that if you look at the economic impact of what we do, the economic impact of a new position in a local community is substantially more than the economic impact of the project in a community on a dollar per dollar basis. That is to say, more of each dollar spent on salary goes into the economy.
I appreciate the difference between the legislature setting priorities for increases in budget and the governor setting priorities for increases in the budget. However, as you pointed out, many of these budgets, the increases are a result of full funding of the formulas. And we established that as a standard that could be easily compared. And I know that in the case of the university budget, that had the lowest increase in the governor. So sure the committee's going to consider that deliberation on the university budget, but it is a standard that we all know that we're starting from the same place.
No, we're not starting from the same place. If the governor gave natural resources a 35% increase and cut that 5%, and the governor gave health a 20% increase and cut that 5%.
Starting from the same place in light of the 5% figure, so that's obviously, especially in your case, easy to discern what your different opinion is. I don't think it would be hard for us to understand that.
My concern is not to
don't mean to abuse the witness, but I'd like to respond to what Mr. Rogers said. I think you've got a good point. For instance, I have in there that not only is it a large increase this year, but it has been for the last 4 years with the governor's set area. If you go back, say, 4 years in Nurmec, you probably get about 100% increase or maybe 150% increase. I don't know. I think
we can calculate that. If you got 4 years at the university, during that 4 years, you might get a 30 or 35% increase. And so it is a, there is a history in some cases of holding the line, in other cases of just throwing things open. And that does make it somewhat of a difference when you come down to budget cutting, it seems to me. I'm not saying I agree with everything you say, Brian, but I'm just saying there is a point there somewhere.
A big difference, all the, of course, to remember is that, it, for instance, in the case of the court system budget, the legislature passed legislation creating a new court. And in the case of NERMAC, it created these new programs to dispose of land and do other things that cost money. Whereas in the case of universities, that's quite a different story. I'm talking about the control and the effect of the legislature on the increase of the budget. Yeah, quite a bit less in the case of universities.
University is
more
based on public use.
I'm not going to try to get the last word. No, if you got it.
Even if you did, he'd all be an amendment.
Representative Adams, are you satisfied that we're finished?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick.
Always has the last one.
Gaining people and losing people, so we might as well try to get started. Before the committee is House Bills 351 and 352. Initially, we'll be considering 351 because if there are some changes that end up being made there, we won't need to consider perhaps House Bill 352. Generally, I think before the legislature, there are two questions in regard to the capital move. And one of them is the Frank Initiative and proposed changes to that initiative, and the mechanism by which the legislature should arrive at a figure that needs to be placed on the ballot in 1982. House Bill 351 addresses both questions, and begin with on the section one that deals with the Frank Initiative changes. Several criticisms have been leveled at this initiative law, in that some people would say that it's misleading and perhaps would result in arriving at a figure that's actually greater than what it would cost to move the capital. And that, in my opinion, is one of the reasons why we need to consider some changes to that language. There are two laws that govern the capital move now. We all know that 1974 initiative of the voters voted in favor of moving the capital, and in 1978 voters allowed that they wanted to approve the cost of that move before it happened. It would be my intention that the Frank Initiative wouldn't be changed so substantially that the people wouldn't still have the opportunity to approve the cost of relocation of the seat of government. The House Bill 351 was primarily drafted by Representative Carney, and if you had some words for the committee at this time, Representative Carney, you may or may not want to discuss the provisions of the Frank Initiative that you proposed changes, but you may wish to discuss the mechanism by which either the legislature or some entity created by the legislature arrives at a cost figure for the relocation that would appear on the ballot. Wherever you like.
Well, I think one thing that's overlooked by a lot of people is that the original initiative that the employers moved to capital specified that it should not be done in a fashion that would necessarily impact the economy too much. So I think it's important to keep in mind that that was the original initiative, and that is a good reason for doing some of the things we've done in this bill, which is to limit the scale of the move. In other words, it's not going to be a move that permanently move all federal funds to state government out of to do is move those facilities, those offices, and those commissions that are necessary to have a functional state government at Willow. Other than that, we attempted not to amend the Frank Initiative more than necessary. Have not removed the year 1992 as the figure for the state for determining total cost of the state. I don't believe it's necessary to do that. we can't come up with a reason to figure we look at the capital without significantly altering the time here to reject the replace bonds with, as far as the mechanism to determine the cost of relocation, it's my feeling that the getting involved with the past Capital Site Planning Commission or Capital Relocation Commission gets us involved with all the statutes that created unnecessarily large demands or required the city to go to city of 37,000 people. So my attempt here is to comply directly with the mandate of Frank Mitchell, which specifies the commission cost of these issues are to be determined by a commission created by the legislature, and I believe that an interim committee of House and Senate members is a good way to do that. And this bill sets out the method that those committee members are selected, and of course, we've got none of this cast in concrete. I think the concept of approaching this action is
I always have questions for Representative Cardi. Representative Rogers?
Yeah, I'd like to ask if the way the Planning Committee is established was set up purposely to ensure a majority of capital promovers on the Planning Committee.
The answer to that is yes. It also says deliberately to provide the representatives from the district so the capital will be moved to the on the committee.
Second question. As to whether or not that is special legislation that's prohibited by the Constitution to specify special
legislation. Do you have any opinion on that?
Question of the sponsor of the bill.
Well, I'm sure that the sponsor of the bill wouldn't introduce something that he felt was unconstitutional. Which, you're suggesting that it is, so.
I just asked.
Yeah. Well, Representative Connie, you're welcome to respond to the question.
Well, I can't give you the exact statute number, but the work committee created to deal with staff moves, and it was set up on the basis of specifying the procedures, the presence, the finance committee members, and other members of the legislature have specified to serve on that committee. I don't have an answer to that question, but it hasn't been done.
Right. The Capital Site Planning Commission had members from the legislature on the committee that would be appointed at the direction of the presiding officers.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the 4406210B does say that one state senator chosen by the president and one state representative chosen by the speaker. It does not say who require the speaker or the president to appoint specific people to make it.
You want my opinion?
I'll ask for the court's opinion.
Representative Curry.
Thank you, Chair. It was the Legislative Oversight Committee that was selected in the mid-70s to oversee the staff relocation.
Representative Rogers.
I have a question along the same lines that Representative Rogers is pursuing. Did you have any discussions with the drafter of the bill or with any attorneys that would be capable of having qualified opinion on the constitutionality of the Section 2 setting up the Joint Energy Committee? I don't personally have a question with it, but I just wonder if you've heard from anyone who might have a qualified opinion as to whether or not there was a question of constitutionality.
It was discussed. My original request was for a commission, but it was a discussion, and the drafter informed me that we'd have to go with the committee. That was not.
Another approach that's being taken is the creation of a capital development corporation, and that's another option we have for the joint interim committee that's being proposed in House Bill 351. The capital development corporation would be given broad authority to make determinations and on specific dollar amounts, relocation completion dates, and definition of what a functional capital would be in the city of Willow, and a specific number of central state employees that would have to be moved from Juneau and from Anchorage. One point that Representative Carney made was that one of the goals of the 1974 initiative was to have as little impact on Juneau as possible. And it seems like in the past, one of the means by which those who oppose the capital move have been using is to increase the cost as much as possible, hoping that the voters would turn it down. And I think that probably in some cases there have been some people who are in favor of the capital move that have tried to keep it so low that the voters wouldn't ever want to turn it down. I think that there's a real need to, regardless of which entity finally decides what the costs are, we should try to be as realistic as possible and try to achieve the goal that was in the 1974 initiative, and that was to affect the city of Juneau as little as possible and still relocate the seat of government. Representative Montgomery?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Under page 3, Joint Interim Committee established a question to the maker of the proposer. Line 27, 28, and 29. On the two other state senators and the two other representatives on the appointment, that does this. Am I reading it incorrect, or did it say who would make the appointment? It defines who is appointed, but in 5 and 6, section 5 and 6 under section 2, I can't determine who will actually do the appointment. Is that, am I missing something?
No, apparently I missed something. It's my intention that the president is going to.
And the Speaker of the House?
Or yeah, the previous line does say Speaker of the House. Doesn't it? No.
No, both, both 5 and 6, I think it announces who, but it doesn't say who will do the appointment.
But it's my intention that the Speaker of the House doesn't.
Senator Rogers?
Yes, I see in that section 1 of the bill the removal of bondable, which is no surprise, but also the limit, the bill limits the public scrutiny only to those, to the public facilities and improvements, and not to other costs related to capital relocation. And it seems to me that directly violates 4406-195, which is the statement of purpose on the Frank Initiative, which says that the purpose of the Frank Initiative was to ensure that people have the opportunity to make an intelligent and objective decision on relocating the capital with all pertinent data available to them concerning the costs to the state, including social, economic, and environmental costs involved. And it seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that this is quite inconsistent with the purpose of that, in that the attempt is to limit public review only to those items which relate to public facilities or improvements.
Well, Mr. Rogers, I think that that's been one of the criticisms of the Frank Initiative, in that it appears to some people that it would require the voters approve costs other than what might be incurred by the state. And I think that that's the purpose of people that it may or may not be the intent of the people who voted for the Frank Initiative, but I think that the generally perceived intent of the Frank Initiative was to have the voters approve the costs to the state. And so I don't know what else you may be talking about, perhaps the housing or other capital construction that might be borne by the private sector.
Mr. Chairman, my among other costs are the cost of indemnification for Juneau, indemnification for Anchorage, for those employees that must be at Anchorage.
Cost of moving employees from Anchorage. I'm not sure where either initiative requires it. When we talk about relocating the seat of government, I'm not sure that the seat of government exists anywhere but Juneau, so I'm not sure why you suggest we have to move people from Anchorage.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I'm not mistaken, there are more state employees in Juneau than Anchorage than there are in Juneau, and quite a number of divisions
have their principal offices in Anchorage. And unless, it seems to me that, in terms of if you're trying to move the capital, you'd be wanting to move those offices as well to the new capital.
Well, that may be your opinion. I don't believe it. You know, right now the law is that the capital of Alaska is in Juneau, and the people's desire seems to have been expressed to move the capital to Willow, so I don't know where moving state employees in Anchorage has anything to do with that. But I suppose that some people might suggest that would be a smart thing to do, but I don't believe it's part of that law. What's in the party?
In response to the statement regarding the graduate. On page 2, line 14, it talks about the committee determining total cost, and that's all that's required in Frankfurt. It's not required in Frankfurt to show total cost as an item to be voted on by the people. The commission is required to determine total cost, but the cost that the people vote on is to have to bond the cost to the state bond collector.
Right, there are, just to follow up, and I apologize for interrupting you there, but I'm trying to catch you on that one point.
Well, perhaps I can interrupt him and catch him on some point. Yeah.
That's fine. Let's make sure that we, none of us interrupt anyone. Go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, in response to Representative Carney's point, the in the purpose section of the Frank Initiative, which I read part of it, the purpose of the Frank Initiative, quote, is to ensure the cost of relocating the capital will not be incurred by the state without the approval of the electorate. That's in the purpose section, and the amendments here directly violate the purpose and of the Frank Initiative and attempt to circumvent the will of the people on that the people should know what the costs are. I think it's pretty clear that's what the bill is trying to do.
Where are you reading from it?
I'm reading from the.
I understand that. I've got that in front of me as well. Which amendment are you referring to that violates the last sentence of the purpose section of the Frank Initiative?
Mr. Chairman, where I'm reading from is firstly the elimination of the word bondable in the cost, and then it used to be cost of the relocation, and
where are you though?
Line 2324, page 1, House Bill 351. What used to be bondable cost of relocation now are estimated costs of public facilities. And the public facilities is a subset of the cost of relocation. The cost of relocation is substantially more than the cost of the new public facility.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Montgomery.
On page 2, doesn't section C, line 14, answer that? The previous question, it says the legislative committee shall also determine the total cost of the relocation to the state, including, but not limited to, the cost of moving personnel and so on. Doesn't that take care of it in the bill?
In response, the bill requires the legislative committee to calculate it. It doesn't require the people to vote on it.
Are you suggesting that the amendments that have been to the Frank Initiative that have been proposed in House Bill 351 remove the requirement for the people to vote on the cost of the indemnification program specifically?
The total cost of the move, the people are voting on a portion of the cost and not on the total cost of the move, which I think violates the intent and spirit and purpose of the Frank Initiative.
Are there other costs that you can think of that are removed? how's that? Besides the indemnification, you suggest the indemnification is not covered. Why don't you take that out?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that indemnification is not covered. I believe that the cost of moving employees, their files, the chairman's gavel, et cetera, are not included there. I believe that assume that a lot of facilities will be provided by the private sector that may or may not be.
gonna be.
Mr. Chairman, I think I understand what the Representative Rush is referring to. Just a technical question, perhaps, on page 3 of the Finance Committee bill, beginning on line 13. That definition of relocate physically, does that or does that not, and I really don't know this, answer the point that you brought up about the chairman's gavel and like that? Because I don't know what it's referring to, so I'm not sure whether it covers it or not, but it appears on the surface that it might.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the definition of relocation on page 3 is a fairly accurate definition. However, what we're voting on page 1 is not relocation, but public facility. Big difference.
Representative Rogers, well, the first part is state money made to be expended and so forth to relocate physically. And so I think that it is covered there. But
only after the people have voted on a proposition setting out the estimated cost of public facility. The people only get to vote on part of the cost of the move, and the way this is written, as soon as the people vote on part of the cost, we can go and spend all we want.
Okay, that's a good point.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Moss.
It's not tying with that, but I was trying to figure out something here on page 3, section 2, the Joint Interim Committee. I've been trying to figure out how I could get on that committee, and I don't see any way I can get on it.
Well, it's line 29, section 6, two other representatives. The speaker could appoint one. You could be one of those.
Well, the only problem with that, Mr. Chairman, I might point out, it says here, one of the representatives appointed under this paragraph shall be appointed from each of the major political parties. Is that a...
Looks like you are left out.
What party is that, though?
Well, maybe if we change the initiative to move the capital to Big Delta, then we'd be...
Well, now, I'm really serious. I said that tongue-in-cheek, but I think maybe there should be a change in that. Okay. Because if you're trying to flip two people up three different ways.
So just following up on Representative Rogers' point, I guess the main point that I get out of that is that there's a difference in the definition of moving the capital, the cost of moving capital, between the one on page 3, which talks about relocate physically and relocation costs, and the one that the public would be voting on. Is that your point?
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Chairman, my point is that the cost of the capital move includes the cost of physically relocating people, files, and furniture, etc., that it includes the cost of building the necessary public facilities and improvements, that it includes the cost of indemnification of the city of Juneau and the city of Anchorage, and that it includes the other associated costs, and that the bill as written only includes a portion of the cost, and it attempts to hide the two costs.
Representative Rogers, I think you pointed out a couple sections that we may be remiss on, and we could probably argue over some of the finer details as to whether or not those costs are really to be included in this in the proposition by saying that the public facilities and improvements required by B3, and we can go look at B3 and see whether that really includes those, but I think it's important that we do make sure that they are included. In fact, all costs, the entire ledger sheet, I think, ought to be considered when we're talking about offering a cost figure to the public. And I think you probably agree that would also include if the Capital Development Corporation decided that we should lease land in that area to commercial outfits for space, or to actually sell land for housing or whatever, that the revenue created by those actions should also be considered when we consider the total cost to the state of this move. So I think I agree with your finer points. No, I wonder if you agree with mine.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, to the extent that those lease revenues are greater than the lease revenues if we were to build a recreational city at Willow, for example. If we were to build a recreational city at Willow without moving the capital, we would also be able to achieve that degree of revenue from leasing ground. So to the extent that we can get more money for leasing it for a capital city, that I would think could be netted out. But otherwise, it's to say that, well, we're going to have to track off all the money we'll make, the state will make from the new land, without taking into account the lost opportunity to make, for example, a recreational city at Willow, would be less than honest.
All right, well, I hadn't heard about the recreational city at Willow that I'm sure you're about to propose. The fact is that the land that sits there right now, I'm sure there's a certain price on it. We actually did make a commitment toward moving the capital to that area. The price of the land would go up. It would be worth more than it is now. The land, there's a lot of land in that area, in the Talkeeton area, that's been in the past sold, and probably more that's being proposed to be sold in the next couple of sales by DNR that would reflect an average price. And I think we could probably determine that the state could reduce the liability of the cost of moving the capital by selling land and leasing land in the area. So that was my point. I think that should be considered as well. Did you have something?
Well, it doesn't specifically state on page 3 about the physical movement of files, furniture, et cetera. It doesn't speak of Nimbus, but I understand it's a new capital, so provision must be made to take Nimbus off.
All right. Representative Deacon, don't vote for it, sorry. Go ahead.
I did have a question on the figure cost that maybe has been clarified for me. I always had a problem with that language because I don't know how you can determine the figure cost. We don't know exactly, we never know exactly how much it's going to cost. And it's really unfair for any kind of planning. To say you have to determine the total cost because you are not going to be able to do it and it's not going to be a possible objective. I would say that you would determine the total cost best estimate you can get rather than blank, determine the total cost because, like I said, that's going to be a total possibility. Could you respond? How would you do that?
Well, I think that's the reason that the planning commission did not speak to the total cost on the ballot. The actual cost, as determined by commission, of relocation of what we're voting on in the 1992, and they were responding to the Justice Rogers' comments about this cost. Whatever figure is put on the ballot for the public to vote on would be the total dollar figure that you can spend in the city of relocation. The total figure would be a lot of vague things that won't be. Those figures are provided for information only to people who are interested in determining what the total cost would be. The cost of the public facilities, capital improvements, utilities, roads on the traffic side itself are what the public is reporting on the transmission. In response to transmission. And I might add that the governor believes that this bill complies with the plan.
I do have one question, and that is the membership of the committee. I can empathize with the committee's boss, because I was hoping I could have a seat there too, but I don't think that I have to compete with Mr. Carney claiming that Mr. Valley is my district to get on, but then.
It's in the book out there. If we did end up going to the joint committee, I was going to propose an amendment to the on page 3, line 23, either be the chairman of the House Finance Committee or his designee.
That's really helpful.
Representative Rogers?
Yes, I just wanted to point out again the idea that if we're going to make money, then we, obviously that money goes in general fund and it still be required to be appropriated. And so the total appropriation, the total appropriation should reflect all of the costs. And you might want to show the revenues which might be made, but I think those should be compared to the opportunity cost of using that land, the capital as opposed to using it for a recreation city or other purposes. In fact, you know, as you know, Mr. Chairman, I'm opposed to move, but it's my feeling that we may wish to consider a recreation city as an opportunity to bail out those people who have invested in the state.
You're not going to propose an indemnification act for the speculator in Rome?
I think that Darren would further the intent that the reason for this kind of legislation is to bail out the people that invest in that area. It's a little bit off the mark. What I'm attempting to do is to comply with the requirements for two initiatives. It's really a straightforward manner as possible. I'm not here to discuss the other people. I'm here to implement the other people. I think that this bill does that to the best of my ability. However, I don't have to take the side of law to get this. If someone has constructed amendment to make this bill that would make it a better bill in compliance with